Welcome. You're listening to Ask the CIO, brought to you by CenturyLink. And now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Grant Schneider, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. Grant, this is a return trip to the show. Thank you for coming back on. We got a lot to talk about.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So I was looking back through and I realized how long it's been since we got to talk last. So it's been several years. I always got to start with the one program that I think people are paying attention to, that people are excited about, which is the Intelligence Community's Cloud Infrastructure Initiative. I think you guys have changed it to from the quad to the sync to probably there's some other seven or eight word that I can't, octagon or something. So give us an update, what's going on with the IC Cloud Infrastructure.
The IC Cloud Infrastructure is a part of an overall IC initiative, the Intelligence Community's Information Technology Enterprise. And I think as with most organizations, DIA has certainly been moving toward cloud infrastructure and moving our apps to be in the cloud. iSight is going to deliver what we're calling the Intelligence Community Cloud. So NSA, CIA both have roles to play in our having both a commercial and a government cloud. DIA has been migrating our applications to something we call Orion, and Orion is really our iSight transition strategy to be sure that we are IC cloud ready, if you will, as soon as the IC cloud is available for us to ride on.
So Orion is kind of a hybrid cloud, meaning it's maybe run by DIA but uses some infrastructure that's shared, or what is Orion?
So Orion was our cloud initiative before iSight came into existence, and so moving forward, the infrastructure piece of Orion will go away and we will take the tools and capabilities and applications and those will ride on the IC cloud. So now for us, Orion is really our migration or our transition strategy to get us to the IC cloud.
So in a sense, you guys are already in the cloud. It just happens to be a single cloud versus maybe a multi-tenant cloud, which sounds like what the IC cloud will eventually be.
Essentially, yes. So I wouldn't say we have everything in the cloud today. We have certainly a lot of our capabilities. And where we're moving, though, is to have the common IC cloud environment so that we can run tools, capabilities, applications against a variety of intelligence community data sets to really enhance information discoverability and the information access across the community for our customers.
From a timing standpoint, the transition to Orion's happening now. It's happened. Is there a completion point and then you move to iSight, or is it an ongoing initiative and then eventually things just move to iSight when that community cloud for the intelligence community is complete and ready to go?
One of the things I should clarify is the iSight initiative initially is focused on the TSSCI environment, and our Orion initiative has an unclassified portion, a secret portion, and a TSSCI portion. So we will be transitioning all of the TSSCI capabilities over to the IC cloud while we will continue to host capabilities for our customers in the secret and unclassified domains on Orion, or our Orion secret initiative, if you will.
Eventually, will the IC cloud have a unclassified and a secret layer two for cloud, or is that something that's a decision yet to be made?
We certainly expect that we're going to have to expand the iSight initiative beyond the TSSCI environment. What that's going to look like and how we will partner with DoD doing that in the future, because Terry Takei over as the DoD CIO has her joint information environment, which we're also playing in the DoD space to be sure that our collateral, secret, and unclassified capabilities are aligned architecturally with what she's doing.
Sounds to me like it's something that's a decision that's coming maybe in the future. And from your standpoint on Orion, are you considered cloud, or is it more virtualization that you're depending on, and with still maybe there's a path toward the cloud?
We've been doing virtualization certainly for years and have had good effects from that. For Orion, though, it is about getting us to the cloud environment. And so we've had some initial deliveries. We've got more deliveries that are slated for later this summer to really get us to that cloud environment that we're building to the NSA specs for the IC cloud. So we're totally in sync with where we're going to end up to. And again, as soon as we possibly can, we'll get our capabilities onto the IC version.
Does the IC version have any time frame around that either? I mean, is it something where I know talking with the DNI Clapper, he mentioned about this has been a big priority. Of course, it happening at a level well below his, but do you have any sense of timing? We'd like to at least start migration later in 2013, early 2014?
Right now, the IOC we're looking at is going to be late fiscal year 13. So later this summer is when we're expecting across the overall iSight to get to IOC, not just for the cloud, also for the desktop environment. And then we've got a couple initial data sets that will be put on there, we as a community, and then we'll start transitioning individual agency capabilities after that, so really into FY14.
All right, so more to follow up with you with. We'll have you back on the show when things get closer. Last time we talked, also, you talked about virtualization as a major initiative. Let's start diving a little deeper into that, because I think it plays off of this cloud idea. What kind of benefits are you seeing? Is there cost savings? Is it just ease of use? Give me a sense of those things that you're benefiting from the virtualization.
We are seeing both cost savings and ease of administration, which is driving the cost savings, right? Because the vast majority of our costs at the end of the day are labor costs as opposed to hardware costs. So while the virtualization saves us some from a hardware perspective, it's really about our ability to administer, whether it's virtualizing servers and able to fit more density onto a rack and into our computer room, as well as virtualizing applications to run them within a virtual desktop environment, which the big value there for us is the ease in administration, the ease it makes patching far easier, and our ability to, you know, make changes to the desktop environment simpler than they were in the past.
The other thing about virtualization that you hear about is the ease of use. You talked about the VDI piece, the mobile piece. Because you have on Orion Cloud both unclassified secret and then I guess top secret, from an unclassified perspective, if we can start there, is that easing you guys into mobility as well, meaning that not necessarily you can take everything home, but like you're over at NSA, you could work at NSA through a laptop or some kind of secure connection. Is that starting to happen?
While we're putting capabilities out in the unclassed environment, our core customer set primarily operates at the TSSCI environment. So primarily our customers are still, I would say, chained to a SCIF in some way, shape, or form in order to do their business. However, we have more mobility from a location mobility. They can go to, you know, any of the DIA facilities really around the world. However, in the national capital region, we're starting to do more, you know, telework from secure facilities. Additionally, on mobility in the TSSCI space, we are pushing towards mobile platforms. So we've got about 100 tablets and laptops in our environment now. They're not wirelessly connected. However, when they connect to the network, download all your information automatically, and people can at least take them to meetings, use them for read books, read email, send email, and then when they hook them back to the network, it will resync with the system.
Now, these, obviously, there's always rules about what you can take into a SCIF and stuff. You can't take a laptop into a SCIF still. I mean, that's still forbidden in some ways, or is there something changing?
You can take a laptop into a SCIF if you have the proper improvements on it. So essentially what we've done is we're loading our desktop environment onto a mobile device, a laptop or a tablet. We do some configuration, physical and electronic changes to it to be sure it complies with all our requirements to be in the SCIF. However, at that point, we're able to operate it inside. We treat it as a TSSCI device. So what you can't do is take it home with you necessarily.
All right. Very interesting. I think it's a fascinating world. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hit upon some other priorities from last time we spoke. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Grant Schneider, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button. And with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Grant Schneider, Chief Information Officer of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Now, Grant, before break, we were talking a lot about the cloud, the IC cloud that's being developed, the Orion cloud that you guys are working in and are developing. And then we also got down the path of virtualization. And one of the initiatives from last time that we talked about was kind of related to virtualization. It's the idea that the DI employees can kind of toggle between classified and unclassified networks more easily. And I think it maybe relates back to that discussion on virtualization. What's the status of that effort?
It certainly is gotten easier. And the VDI environment that we have at DIA, which I think last time we talked, we were just getting ready to roll out our next generation desktop environment, is a multi-level environment for us. So while it doesn't allow you to go all the way down to unclassified, it does allow us to have all our classified systems essentially delivered to you via one box and one wire and to one monitor. So we can have our secret, your Five Eyes environment, or other multilateral, bilateral, international systems, as well as our TSSCI delivered into multiple windows on one screen. For the unclassified environment, we still do that via a separate network that's kept physically separate from all our classified ones.
And the point there is both the security issue, meaning if it was all in one wire, that could potentially be a security risk, but also it's hard to differentiate between classified and unclassified on that one wire. I mean, I know I'm simplifying it, but is that the base of?
It's more the security issue, and it's more a risk perspective. So we've had systems in the past that actually did all and did from TSSCI, secret and unclassified, across one wire. It's something that there's technology that's able to do. However, it still poses a greater risk just by having that physical connection, and certainly in today's cyber environment, we've made the decision that risk isn't worth the savings or the reward, if you will, that we get out of having them all on one cable.
That gives you a vendor who can think of something, a way to do that and lower your risk. So I'm sure now you're going to get a call and you can blame me. One of the things that you also, big issue for DIA, is the site contract. This is a contract that was awarded probably 4 or 5 years ago now. Give us a sense of how is it helping your infrastructure, and then we'll maybe even talk about a potential recompete.
We put Site in place several years ago. It has been a really good vehicle for us. It's a multi-award IDIQ contract, and we transitioned almost all of our sort of IT support services over to that vehicle. In that process, we had some vendor changeouts. Quite frankly, all of our transitions went really well, better than I had expected them to go from a end-user or end-user customer experience perspective. We've also seen some pretty significant cost reductions that have allowed us to continue to provide the same level of service within, you know, what have become decreasing budgets here over time.
Can you talk about the cost reductions percentage-wise? Because one of the things that people think of is that when they move from, you know, one vendor to the next, there's a cost there, and then the users get all upset, so the help desk gets more calls, so there's a up cost there. Can you give us a sense of how you've been able to hold down costs or percentage of cost savings?
So we've done a couple things on cost savings. A, there were some cost savings on some of the rate structures as we went from one contract to the next. However, we also have implemented some, you know, if you will, business process changes. So we're pushing more and more of our customers into, you know, what we call tier one or first call resolution at our service desk. So over the last 6 years, I would say, we've gone from 17 service desks down to where we now have two, one phone number. Everyone around the world calls it, whether they're in Afghanistan or in Washington, D.C. or in Korea or in Hawaii, go into that one place. And our objective there is to have a first call resolution of around 60%. Right now, we're hovering at about 55% of first call resolution.
And when you say first call resolution, it's basically just, we define it as, I call, I have a problem, my issue gets resolved, I don't have to make a second call.
Correct. We don't have to forward you to someone else, and you don't have to make a second call. And we do it as really more first contact, because you may come in electronically or come in via a phone call. But yeah.
So Site, I think, if I remember correctly, was awarded somewhere in the 2007-2008 timeframe, maybe a little later. It's pushing that five-year mark, which is what a lot of contracts end up being recompeted. Is there any discussion yet about a recompete for your IT support? It may not be called Site, obviously, but just the IT support services.
Our contracts moving forward are going to get tied up back into iSite, as we talked about, from an overall community perspective. And one of the initiatives that the ODNI is leading is pulling together and basically issued some data calls to us to collect our contract data so that we can start to align not just the DIA contracts, but really what are the community contracts we have across different agencies so that we can award some community contracts for those services of common concern, if you will, where we've got individual service providers across the intelligence community.
Right. A lot of people are going to be interested in that, and a lot of upset people if they don't win. So I wish you luck on that one. Let's jump into some of your new priorities you've been working on over the last few years. What are you looking to get done over the next 6 or 9 months here at DIA specifically?
The big thing for DIA over the next 6 to 9 months, beyond running the day-to-day IT infrastructure, obviously, which our customers are certainly dependent on, for iSight, DIA and NGA are the service provider for the IC desktop environment. That same IRC date of the end of this summer holds for the desktop environment. And so we've got everyone who works on desktop, either at DIA or NGA, has been working really hard to deliver the IRC of the desktop environment. And we recently have provided the security documentation over to the DNI for certification. And we've been working through some functional and security testing so that we can meet that IRC date. That delivery of IRC that will be about a little over 2,000 customers between DIA and NGA is our prime focus this summer.
And when you say desktop, if you can be a little more specific, you mean like Windows 7, or do you mean more like here's the allowable configuration of your desktop, here is the security standards that will be expected that you'll use? Is it that type of standards?
It's actually the delivery of the desktop. So we will be delivering a VDI desktop environment as well as email services, home directory, SharePoint. Eventually, not at IRC, we'll also have unified communications, both voice and video, in that desktop environment. So we're delivering basically the full package to those folks onto, for the most part, existing thin client infrastructure that's in place at DIA and NGA.
And is there a move then that once you kind of set it up here, it goes to other people within the intelligence community, has a rolling kind of deliverable implementation?
We've broken the desktop delivery into two phases, phase one being DIA and NGA, phase two being where we're going to expand to the rest of the community. Phase one we're doing with really our existing hardware, our existing infrastructure, our existing resources to deliver that capability. For phase two, there will be an acquisition. Back to talking about acquisitions, there will be a major acquisition for the phase two, and we're looking to have that RFP on the street sometime really the next 4 to 6 months, hoping to have an award 6 or so months after that and be able to start delivery of capabilities another 6 months after that. So we're targeting the beginning of FY15 to be delivering the phase two capabilities, which is when we'll be bringing in the rest of the IC.
And from a RFP standpoint, I know there's not a lot you can say now because it's still a good time off. Would that go through the normal public process, or is it only going to go to people who meet a certain set of standards to work in the classified environment? I know you're not an acquisition person per se, but from your perspective, is there anything you can tell people because so they don't call you?
We've had a number of industry days already about this and been able to put people in touch with our joint program office that's run in the desktop to get that information out. So again, we've engaged with industry. What mechanisms by which the final RFP is going to go out, I'm going to leave that to the acquisition folk.
All right, good man. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll catch up on some other things that you're working on. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Grant Schneider, the Chief Information Officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Grant Schneider, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. Now, Grant, before break, we're talking a lot about your priorities. You mentioned the big one of the virtual desktop that's happening through the Intelligence Community Cloud Initiative. But there's some other priorities you're working on, too, I imagine. Give us a sense of what else you're hoping to accomplish.
So I would say the other major item that we're working on, or at least the thing that keeps me up at night, is security of the overarching JWICS system. So JWICS, which is really the DoD and IC's TSSCI network environment, DIA runs that on behalf of the IC and DoD communities. And so we're always looking at how can we enhance the safeguarding of the information and the tools and the capabilities that are on that system.
I know there's a lot of sensitivities around it, so I know there's a limited detail you can give, but is that system fairly walled off? I mean, how much security do you have to worry about? Because my understanding of a lot of the classified and secret and top secret type of systems that they don't even touch the public internet. But is there still concern about security because there's the insider threat, there's still phishing attacks and the like?
It's certainly a different security profile. Our first layer of security is that you have to go past the armed guard and get into a SCIF in order to gain access to the network. That said, since we do have some cross-domain capabilities that interconnect systems and data does get moved around, while we don't get many spear phishing attacks on JWICS per se, we will occasionally find some form of a malware in the system that we need to react to. And obviously, the need to look out for insider threat is always something that we're worried about on all our systems.
I was at a recent event where they talked about threat intelligence. I thought it was a fascinating conversation. The idea of knowing not just that someone's in your system and or there's a problem in your system, but the pattern of that person in your system. I imagine that's something that you guys are big into when it comes to the security issue. I mean, can you talk a little bit about threat intelligence at all, and just in terms of how it's used to understand what's happening on your networks, either at a classified level or above and beyond?
It really gets down into, you know, for us, anomalous behavior detection, you know, and that's something we certainly look at across all our networks. We look at people in the unclassified environment to see whether they're utilizing their government furnished equipment in some illegal, illicit, or any other sort of ways, and we've got capabilities to trigger on that. And similarly, you know, we're concerned about maybe it's different behavior, however, the wrong behavior patterns on the classified system.
Let's talk a little bit about your IT strategic plan. You guys have several priorities, but then you have this overarching set of goals. How do they all work together? How does the strategic plan fit in with these priorities?
I view it as a symbiotic relationship on, you know, really our near-term priorities as well as our more strategic objectives. My strategic plan is really laid out into about four different areas, one of which enhancing information sharing across our community, across our customer set, providing a world-class, secure, collaborative environment. Again, that goes towards information sharing as well. Third one is developing our workforce. Lieutenant General Flynn, who has been on board about 9 months now as the DIA director, one of his three focus areas is also on the workforce. And something that we absolutely have to do is take care of our intellectual capital as far as our human resources are concerned. And then the fourth one is continuing to operate as effectively and efficiently. You know, where can we find cost avoidance? Where can we find ways to deliver existing and additional capabilities within the most economic manner possible?
One of the things about the workforce that's challenging, it's a tough environment all around, both from a sense of finding the people, but also, you know, the environment of the pay freezes and such is challenging. How are you guys doing in finding people? Are you still recruiting heavily? Are you still getting people in the door who are interested in serving at DIA? Because I think that one of the things I heard from the DNI Clapper was he has a lot of concern about a workforce taking the hit during these times of sequestration and budget challenges.
That's absolutely a challenge. And, you know, one of the things that DIA writ large and certainly within the CIO organization we've had going for us is, you know, we attract people with a dedication to serve and a dedication to the mission and the customers that we do service from DIA and from within my organization. I would say for the most part, those folks are still dedicated, still excited to come to work. as you start to potentially reduce their pay or send them messages that it's more about money than it is about the service. We're concerned on possibly losing people. I will say that we are still getting a good number of applicants for our positions, and people are still looking to come work here and view this as a good place to be, a good mission to be part of.
We're almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to catch up on information sharing. You know, I love talking about all the different initiatives that have gone on over the last few years. I'm sure last time we spoke, I asked you about the C space and the A space and the J space and all those things. Give me a broader view. Where are you guys with information sharing? Are there some new tools that have emerged recently that are making information sharing easier?
One of the things that we're really looking to the cloud environment to be able to do for us is to expand access to information, both from the ease of going to a particular tool and having it run against a variety of data sources. So historically, we've built an application by bolting a data set onto to some application or some search engine or whatever you were trying to manipulate the data with. By getting it into the cloud, we're going to be able to take that same search engine, run it against multiple data sets, whether they're DIA data sets or some of our partner organization data sets, and really return more information back to our analysts. And so we think that's going to be a game changer in the world of information sharing.
In a sense, is it harder now to run analysis against DIA data against, you know, let's say NGA data and say NSA data? Once you guys are in that cloud environment, that is almost an automatic. It hits, hey, here's the parameters and here's my roles and responsibilities, what I'm allowed to see. So boom, go do it. And then it pulls back everything that's potentially worthwhile.
What you described is exactly where we're looking to get to. I would say today we're sharing more information than we ever have at the agency level. So DIA analysts certainly have access to other agencies' data, if you will. However, it's more work than, you know, we want it to be. And in the ultimate environment, your identity, your access will drive what you have access to see, to know that it's there, and then what you have access to actually grab and manipulate and, you know, do whatever you need to do to develop your products with.
It seems to me, I mean, those are the two keys here is access to wider data, but also the roles and responsibilities piece. Is all that coming together through this IC cloud? I mean, that's being held up there as a be-all, end-all in many respects. I mean, I know it won't be because there's always challenges, but those are the two pieces that you see as, well, if we can get those two pieces right, then everything else can fall into place very nicely.
The cloud is a piece of the iSight initiative, and the iSight initiative has a number of other elements, one of which is our IANA services, which are going to really drive that identity and access management. That has to be coupled with the data in the cloud in order to make all this work seamlessly.
All right, a lot to follow up with you with. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I will have you back on the show before 2 years goes up again. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Grant Schneider, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. Grant, once again, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Jason, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This show has been sponsored by CenturyLink. If you missed any portion of the show, you can hear it in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.